discussing the issue of the nature of the Shabbat laws in general and the issue of the Oraita versus the Rabbanan. One of the advantages of giving the same shiur in Brookline and Cambridge, that's my laziness in old days. In the old days, I used to just simply go through two different masechtos, one in Brookline and one in Cambridge. But now, with I just don't have the energy to prepare two different things.
Which do we get, the second
time? Well, that's the benefit, you see. Some things I learn from you here, and I'm able to transmit there. If I was really smart, I wouldn't have to prepare anything. I would just take the information that I got here and transmit it there, and vice versa. For example, Mel's bringing of that article in the Scientific American about the production of an egg was quite instructive, and I didn't know anything about it. I duly reported on it in Cambridge. And here, one of my students in Cambridge came up with some interesting information, which I sort of vaguely knew, but it's worth transmitting here because it supports the thesis that I was trying to make. Remember what we said in the first shiur, that the laws, the Shabbat laws, the Shabbos laws, underwent some relatively strong shift from being from Homa Kula, that is, from the time of the end of the Second Temple period, or just before that, to the time of the Mishnah. And the second point that we made in the first year was that the concept of the Lamed Tet Melachot as a way of categorizing the what constitutes a capital offense on Shabbat and what is not a capital offense on Shabbat is relatively late. And we suggested that even the notion of what constitutes an Isur D'Oraita or an Isur D'Rabbanan is earlier than the 39 Melachot, but it's still something that is probably relatively late. The evidence that we gave for that was that it appears very rarely. I think we listed five or six places in the Mishnah where this distinction took place. And that, in effect, many of the laws which were considered extremely severe before the categorization into the Lamed Tet Melachot got demoted, so to speak, because they didn't fit into a new conceptual scheme. And we listed amongst those things, for example, the notion of riding on a horse. Now, one of my students in Cambridge xeroxed for me, and I'll pass it out to you, the passage in the Sefer HaYovlin, the Book of the Jubilees, pertaining to the Shabbat laws, and it's sufficiently interesting to us that we should just read together what it actually says there. It may take us 10 or 15 minutes to read it out loud together, but it's worthwhile. Let me pass two pages. Take one page and pass it on, and there's going to be a second page. Again, I didn't have a chance to collate. I just had a chance in time. It's Xerox. Okay, that's the second page. Okay. Now, if there were an Encyclopedia Britannica here, Judaica here, we might see what the latest up-to-date theory might be, or at least as of 20 years ago, as to the origin of the Book of the Jubilees. Remember that this text that we have in front of us is an English translation from an Ethiopic, a Getz translation, from probably a Greek translation from some original source, that original source being either in Hebrew or in Aramaic, we don't know. So this is sort of a third-hand translation, so one can't be too finicky as to the actual meaning of words or phrases. And the second thing that we have to remember is that the author of this book, or authors, or compendic compiler of this book, belonged to a sect which was certainly separate from what we regard as rabbinic or traditional Judaism, especially as regards their calendar. The most striking fact about the state of the Book of the Jubilees is that the structure of their calendar is different from our accepted calendar. So they certainly represent a sect. And therefore, it's always a question in our mind to how much what we read in this book represents sectarian opinion how much of it represents the position of the halakha before it developed further into rabbinic Judaism. And it's hard to make a clear-cut distinction between the two, so we should bear all of that in mind as we read it. Nevertheless, it seems to me that there's enough interesting material here that even with that warning, with that caveat, nevertheless, I think we can... There are documents in the Qumran sect which are quite either extracts from the Book of Jubilees or somewhat similar to it, but that's why I don't know what the latest scholarly opinion is on the subject. Okay, so let's read this. After this law, I made you know the days of the Sabbath in the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. I also related to you the Sabbaths of the land on Mount Sinai and the years of the Jubilee of the Sabbath years I related to you. But it's here I have not related to you until you entered the land you possess. And the land will keep its Sabbaths. Let's skip down to line 6. And behold, the commandment of the Sabbaths... Am I reading from the second page or the first page?
First.
Which way does this go? That's right. Let's just read this way. And behold, the commandment of the Sabbaths... I just don't remember now. It's 225... 58, can you see a page number?
58,
59. Yeah, I think I'm... Okay, that's right. Let's just read this way. And behold, the commandment of the Sabbaths I've written to you, and on all the judgments of the law. 6 days you will work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. You shall not do any work in it, you or your children or your manservant or your maidservant or any of your cattle or the stranger is with you. So that's from the Asaos Adivah. It's just simply a quotation. And let the man who does anything on it die. Okay, now here's a list of the capital offenses. Every man who will profane this day, who... I don't know. Every man who will profane this day, and now what is the definition of profaning this day? Who will lie with his wife. According to the Book of Jubilees, having connubial relations, sexual relations on Shabbat is prohibited. And whoever will discuss a matter that he will do on it, so he might make on it a journey for any buying or selling. Okay, so therefore talking about business on Shabbat is also considered a capital offense. Now here's what's very interesting for us. And whoever draws water on it, which was not prepared for him on the sixth day. So notice here you have explicitly Rabbah's halacha of hachana. That is, if you're using water that had not been set aside before Shabbos, then that's a capital offense. And whoever lifts up anything that he will carry to take out of his tent or from his house, let him die. You shall not do any work upon the day of the Sabbath except what you prepared for yourself on the sixth day to eat and to drink and to rest and to observe a Sabbath from all work that day and to bless the Lord your God, who gave you the day of festival and the holy day. And the day of the holy kingdom for all Israel is this day amongst their days always. For great is the honor which the Lord gave to Israel to eat and drink and be satisfied on this day of festival and to rest on it from all work of the occupations of the children of men, except to offer incense and to bring gifts and sacrifices before the Lord for the days and the Sabbaths. So avodas ha-karbonos is permitted. This work alone shall be done on the day of the Sabbath in the sanctuary of the Lord your God, so that may atone for Israel with continual gift day by day for an acceptable memorial before the Lord, and so that he might accept them forever day by day just as he commanded you. Okay? And any man who does work on it, or who goes on a journey, or who plows a field either at home or any other place, or who kindles a fire, or who rides on any animal, or who travels the sea in a boat, or any man who slaughters or kills anything, or who slashes the throat of cattle or bird, or who snares any beast or bird or fish, or who fasts, or makes war on the day of the Sabbath, let the man that does any of these things on the Sabbath die, so that the children of Israel might keep the Sabbath according to the commands of the Sabbaths of the land, just as is written in the tablets which he placed in my hand, so that I may write for you the law of each time according to each division of its days. So notice that riding on a horse is considered a capital offense here, and traveling in a boat. If you remember when we were learning Goyshel Shabbat, we saw that the laws of traveling became gradually more and more relaxed as the halacha developed. But according to the Book of Jubilees, going on a ride on a boat is a capital offense. The account of the divisions of the race is finished here. The laws for the Sabbath. He created heaven and earth and everything which he created in 6 days, and the Lord made the seventh day holy for all of his works. Therefore he commanded concerning it, let everyone who will do any work therein die, and also who defiles it, let him surely die. And you command the children of Israel, let them guard this day so that they might sanctify it and not do any work therein and not defile it, because it is more holy than any day. And everyone who pollutes it, let him surely die. And anyone who will do any work therein, let him surely die forever, so that the children of Israel might guard this day throughout their generations and not be uprooted from the land, because it is a holy day and a blessed day. And every man who guards it and keeps therein a Sabbath from all his work will be holy and blessed like us. Make known when you come to the children of Israel a judgment that they should keep the Sabbath therein and not forsake it in the error of their hearts. And make known that there is not permitted to do work thereon which is unlawful, or being unseemly to do their pleasure thereon. And make known that they should not be prepared anything which will be eaten or drunk which they have not prepared for themselves on the sixth day. Okay? Again, an emphasis on hachana. And make known that it is not lawful to draw water or to bring in or take out any work within their dwellings which is carried in their gates. And they should not bring in or take out from house to house on that day, because it is more holy and more blessed than any day of the Jubilee.
Have an Erev in those days.
Well, it's more than not having an Erev. Notice that it says from house to house. According to the rabbinic definition, it's from Mishus HaYochid to Mishus HaRabim. If you're my next door neighbor and I pass something from my house to your house without its going through Mishus HaRabim, it's not a Melacha D'oraita according to our definition of what is the Melacha of Hotzah. Hotzah is only Mirshus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim or Arba Amot to Rishus HaRabim.
What do you mean by Pulut to Rishus HaRabim? What's the Hebrew word?
I would assume that it's Mechala Leho.
That word doesn't really fit for Pulut.
Why not? That's not a bad translation. Okay? On this day we kept the Sabbath in heaven before it was made known to any human to keep the Sabbath around upon the earth. The Creator of all blessed it, but did not sacrifice any people or nations to keep the Sabbath, sanctify any people or nations to keep the Sabbath therein, with the sole exception of Israel. He granted to them alone that they might eat and drink and keep the Sabbath therein, etc., etc. Okay? So, at any event, we see from here, repeated several times, the laws of Hachana, the law against riding on an animal, and the law against travel. The one point that is also worth making, because here we have a large number of auxiliary sources which support this same principle, is the issue of not making war on Shabbat. Okay? So let me pass this around. This is from the Book of Maccabees, Maccabees 1. Okay. Mattathias cried out throughout the town in a loud voice, all who are zealous for the sake of the Torah, who uphold the covenant, march out after me. Whereupon he and his sons fled to the mountains, leaving behind all their possessions in the town. At that time they went down to dwell in the desert, seeking justice and vindication, they and their children and their wives and their cattle, hard pressed by the persecutions. The report came to the king's men and to the forces in Jerusalem, the city of David, that men who had violated the command of the king had gone down to the hiding places in the desert. With a large force they pursued them, and on coming upon them they encamped and formed battle line against them on the Sabbath day, saying to them, come out to us and obey the word of the king, and you shall live, and we shall let you live. They, however, replied, we shall neither come out nor obey the word of the king to profane the Sabbath day. Accordingly they advanced quickly upon them in battle line. But the Jews neither replied to them, nor hurled a stone at them, nor blocked the entrances to their hiding places, saying, let us all die in our innocence. Heaven and earth bear witness over us that you condemn us unjustly. They attacked them in battle line on the Sabbath. They were killed with their wives, their children, and their cattle to the number of 1,000 human beings. When the news reached Mattathias and his friends, they were deeply grieved over the victims' fate. They said to one another, if we all do as our brothers have done, and do not fight against the Gentiles for our lives and our laws, they will now quickly wipe us off the face of the earth. On that day they came to a decision. If any man comes against us in battle on the Sabbath day, we shall fight against him and not all die as brothers died in their hiding place. So here you have an account, whether it's accurately historical or not, but you have something that is purportedly a historical account of a decision taken to allow the fighting of a defensive battle on Shabbat, implying that prior to this decision, this notion of pikuach nefesh, dokesh Shabbat, was not universally accepted, and confirming what we saw in the Book of Jubilees, that it was generally assumed that even to defend yourself in war on Shabbat was not permitted.
Now, does that mean if they come out of the cave,
either it doesn't, I don't know whether it means if coming out of the cave means that they're violating Shabbat, or whether doing battle means they're coming out of the cave to do battle. So it's not clear. It's not clear, but they may have felt that even leaving their dwelling place on Shabbat, if they were staying there on Shabbat, just going out of the house into the countryside, they had been construed as a chilul Shabbat.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I just don't know the answer to your question. Now, of course, we have to understand that this particular episode in the time of the Maccabees was not the first time that the Jewish nation were ever engaged in war, right? I mean, there were wars recounted throughout Bayit Rishon, and if this problem had... whatever. If this problem, you don't have to take just Yericho. You can take any in Shoftim or in Shmuel Aleph or Shmuel Beis or Mlachim Aleph or Mlachim Beis. There's no shortage of wars, and it's reasonable to assume that not all these wars were 6 days long or less. Therefore, it's reasonable to assume that the facts of this problem certainly were present to the Jewish people long before the business with the Maccabees. One can only therefore assume that this taking a heavy view of the Chumrah of Hilchot Shabbat was something which was a development of the Second Temple period, and that during Bayit Rishon, the idea that you would not be allowed to fight a defensive battle on Shabbat was not something that was part of the mental makeup, just as it's not part of our mental makeup now. But there certainly was a period in which it wasn't just the Sefer HaYovlim, but the various other sources that we've seen, like the Book of Maccabees, it's not just them. Josephus recounts it, and other anti-Jewish historians recount it, and so on. So that the Jews refused to engage in battle on Shabbat. So this is not so all that I'm saying is that as far as many of the other things that are mentioned in the Book of Jubilees, I don't have corroboratory sources which will say that this was common practice, right? We had the notion of hachana, that you're not allowed to use water from your well unless it was drawn before Shabbat. So the idea of hachana was present in the Book of Jubilees in a far more severe form than we know it today. But nevertheless, we don't have any corroboratory evidence. I don't have any additional sources which say that this was also the common practice. I don't know what they
held up. The sun remained the longest, so he could continue the battle.
That was just a battle. The day of the week, I don't know. You tell me what day of the week it was. I just don't know. But the point I want to make here is that it may be illogical to draw from a corroboration of one point a corroboration of several of the other points. But on the other hand, we do have the story of Shimon ben Shetach executing a person for riding a horse on Shabbat. The Gemara says that this was a Horat Shah. So we do have some corroboratory evidence that the view of riding on an animal was considered as a capital offense, but it certainly doesn't fit into any of the Melachot. Yeah. And we also, as we see from our Mishnah and Beitzah, have, at least if we take Rabbah's interpretation of it, the idea that the laws of Hachana had existed in before the categorization into the Melachot, and as we studied, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, the Gemara itself recounts that the laws of Muktzah underwent a drastic revision, Lekula, in the course of the Halakha. Okay. All right, so I'm just bringing this as corroboratory evidence, a supplement, an appendix to the first shiur. Tonight I want to embark, it will take us probably two shiurim, on, as I mentioned last week, what should be maybe the first topic on the agenda of the law of Hilchot Yom Tov. The Torah says, "V'yom harishon mikra kodesh, v'yom hashvi'i mikra kodesh yelachem, kol melacha lo yeaseh bahem, ach asher yeachel lachol nefesh, hu yivado yeaseh lach." That's what it says in the Torah. The Ibn Ezra says, "V'yom harishon v'yom yitziat Mitzrayim, v'yom hashvi'i v'yom tviyat paro kasher paresh, kol melacha, v'chol hamoladim, chutz miyom Shabbat v'yom ha-Kippurim, ein katuv behem kol melacha, rak v'pesach levado amar v'hitne lehutzio kal nefesh, v'chol makom, bein v'pesach, bein v'yatzeret, bein v'yom hazikaron v'chal ma'atzukot, v'orchez der tzara lomar kol melacha lo ta'atzu, רק במקום אחד בפסח לא תעשה כל מלאכה דרך שתהיה תחילה." Okay. So he's saying that the phrase, this explanation of what constitutes a melacha is mentioned here in the laws of Pesach. The next pasuk, and this will be important for us, is after it says, "Hu levado ach asher yeachel lechol nefesh, hu levado yeaseh lachem," it says, "Ushmartem et ha-matzot, ki v'etzem hayom hazeh hotzeti et zevoteichem mi'aretz Mitzrayim." Then in Emor it says, "Bayom harishon mikra kodesh yelachem, kol melechet avodah lo ta'asu." Okay. The Ramban on says there, "Kol melechet avodah, afilo melechot hachashuvot lachem avodah, v'tzarich sheyesh כיסרון כיס בבטלה שלהם, כגון דבר הרבה, כך הבנתי מתורת קונים, דכתיב יכול החול שמועד יעשו במלאכת עבודה, וכולי לשון רשי." So that's Rashi's interpretation. I'll read Rashi, the Ramban is quoting Rashi, "אפילו מלאכות החשובות לכם עבודה, בצורך שיש בהם החול וכיסרון כיס שלה, בבטלה שלהם, etc." So Rashi interprets מלאכת עבודה to be a contrast between יום טוב and חול המועד. Melechet Avodah means even a necessary work, right? You stand to lose a large amount. It'll be a huge loss to you if you don't sell this stock for this particular day. If you're going to miss out on this customer, you're going to lose a half a year's business. On Chol HaMoed, that might have been sufficient grounds to allow you to engage in that activity. But on Yom Tov, it's not allowed. That's Rashi's interpretation of the phrase Melechet Avodah.
But he is consistent on that had Melechet Avodah except in Kippur, which is called Melechet
Avodah.
So, but even when there's no Chalimot.
Yeah, but he's just making a distinction. But he's saying Rashi is, Ramban disagrees with Rashi. We'll see the Ramban's interpretation in a moment. But Rashi is interpreting Melechet Avodah to mean even work, which is necessary. If you don't do it, you're going to suffer a financial loss. Nevertheless, you're not allowed to do it on Yom Tov. The Ramban says, "Lashon Rashi einenu nachon klal." This can't be right, the Ramban says. "Ki mahatam sheyomer katuv lo tasam melechet davar havei v'yavohu sha'ah melechot v'kal v'chomer v'imchein ra'ui sheyomer af b'shabbat." If this is the interpretation that even something which involves financial loss you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov, then a similar language should be used for Shabbat. אפילו בשבת כן, בעוד שאם כן, הרי חולו של מועד רמוז בתורה שמותר בדבר העבי. Furthermore, if that's the interpretation of the pasuk, then the implication is that the allowance of engaging in work on Chol HaMoed is possible, is something which is implied by this pasuk. V'heim amru lo masra ha-katuv ela ha-chachamin, she'ein b'torah remez eizu mulacha muteret ve'eizu mulacha asura. In other words, if this is to draw a contrast between what is permitted on Chol HaMoed and what is prohibited on Shabbat, and the line is drawn on the issue of severe financial loss, the implication is that this, at least this rule of Chol HaMoed, is implicit in the Pasuk, and the Chazal say that the actual laws of Chol HaMoed were given to the Rabbanim to decide. The Lashon Avodah, the Ramban says, Kolel hu kol hamlachot v'hamishimushim. Oved avodato yisbal lechem avdecha sheishanim ve'avadata et oivecha. In other words, the word avodah occurs in these three quite disparate places. In Mishle, where it says that someone who works will survive, or where it says that your servant shall work for you, evidently will work for you 6 years, or where it says that you will work for your enemies in the klalot, ve'eino meshamesh b'shul makom v'davah ha'aved bilvad, shim lo teyaseh hayom, lo teyaseh l'machah. In other words, he's simply saying that the word avodah, if we look consistently throughout Tanakh as to how it is used, does not carry this implication that Rashi wishes to attach to it, namely that it is work which is pressing, that if you don't do it today, you will not be able to do it tomorrow. Aval perush melechet avodah, the Ramban says that the interpretation of the word melechet avodah is kol melacha she'ina letzorech ochel nefesh. The word melechet avodah is to mean business, as opposed to household work involved in the preparation of meals. Okay? Ke'inyan she'ne'emar sheshet yamim ta'avod v'yasita kol melachtecha, or v'chal avodeh basadeh, ne'evadetem v'nizra'atem, v'kayin haya oved adamam, u'melacha shehi ba'ochel nefesh, hi melechet hana'ah, aval lo melechet avodah. In other words, the preparation of food is considered as, it's not, it is melacha, but it's pleasurable work. I don't know if all people that cook in the kitchen, if your wife will always agree that cooking the meal is pleasurable work, but the implication here is to distinguish between business activities and activities devoted to pleasure. Whether you're getting the pleasure or somebody else is getting the pleasure, but it's activities devoted to pleasure. V'zemit ba'er b'torah, ki b'chag ha-matzot, she'amar t'chila kol melacha lo yaseh b'chem hutzrach lefaresh, ach asher ye'achel l'chol nefesh hu yabado yaseh lachim. Yes. U'v'sha'ar kol ha-yamim tovim yikatzer v'yomar kol lechat avodah lo ta'asu l'esor kol melacha she'inenu ochol nefesh, v'lehudia she'ochol nefesh mutar ben. In other words, what the Ramban is saying is that the word avodah here is a shorthand for what it said in the first holiday in the laws of Hilchot Pesach, that ma'okal nefesh is mutar. V'lo yomar ha-katuv la'olam b'yachad mikal shar kol shar yamim tovim kol melacha v'lo yifaresh behem heter ochel nefesh ki melechet avodah yilamed al zeh. אבל בפרשת כל הבכור וחג המצות אמר ויום השביעי עצרת לה' אלוקיך לא תעשה מלאכה ואתה מפני שכבר התיר בו בפירוש אוכל נפש לא הוצרך לומר בו כל מלאכת עבודה והזכיר מלאכה סתם ולא אומר כל מלאכה כמו שנאמר בשבת ויום הכיפורים הכוונה לא תעשה מלאכה אשר הזהרתיך עליך. In other words, he repeats what the Ibn Ezra said, that only on Shabbat and on Yom Kippurim does it say kol melacha. וכתב רבי אברהם, כל מלאכת עבודה, מגיד שאינו מתיר אלא במלאכת אוכל נפש, כדכתיב בעניין הזה במקום אחר, וביום הראשון מקרא קודש יהיה לכם, כל מלאכה לא יעשה בהם, מפני שמזכיר שם כל מלאכה, הוא צריך לפרש אשר יאכל לכל נפש ולבדו יעשה לכם. פירוש מלאכת עבודה, מלאכה המשתמרת la'avodat kinyan, work which is principally devoted to the acquisition of profit, kegon zriya uktzira v'chafira uchiyotzei behen, aval ochel nefesh eno mulechet avodah zeh l'shono. So he's citing the Ibn Ezra to support his position. V'habraita shebetorat kohanim kachu shenuya b'nuskaot ha'mudakot kol mulacha lo te'atasu harei zeh bol olamed ad yumei mo'adecha shehen mulacha. יוחד יו אסורים בכל מלאכת עבודה, תלמוד לא מהו. הוא אסור בכל מלאכת עבודה, ואין ימי מועד אסורים בכל מלאכת עבודה. דברי ויוסי הגלילי, רבי עקיבא אומר, מהי תלמוד לא מאלה מועדי השם אשר תקראו אותם מקראי קודש, אם לעניין ימים טובים, הרי כבר ימים טובים אמורים. אם כן, למה נאמר אלה מועדי השם אשר תקראו אותם מקראי קודש, אלו ימי מועד שהם אסורים בעשיית מלאכה. יכול יהיו אסורים בכל מלאכת עבודה, תלמוד לומר הוא לבדו. פירושו שרבי יוסי הגלילי דורש לא תעשו אלא מועדי השם, לומר שהכתוב עושה עשייה במועדים כולם. וכל שכולם שווים לי איסור ויעשו בכל מלאכת עבודה כראשון ושמיני, ונדרוש כל מלאכת העולם תעשו אלא מועדי השם, שהמקרא נדרש לפניו ולפני פניו, מעת הכתוב עצרתי כל מלאכת עבודה תעשו, שנייצרת כמוהו בכל מלאכת עבודה, ואין חול המועד אסור כמוהו בכל מלאכת עבודה, אלא במלאכה בלבד, עד שאמר לא תעשו, ולא הזכירה הכתוב, ולא רמז זה כלל, ומסרה לחכמים. Okay. So that's the, let me skip a little bit. ואם כל זה מצאתי קושיה על דברינו מבריתא השנויה בספרי כל מלאכת עבודה לא תעשו מגיד שעשו בעשיית מלאכה מניין להתיר באוכל נפש נאמר כאן מקרא קודש ונאמר להלן מקרא קודש מה להלן להתיר באוכל נפש אף כאן להתיר באוכל נפש ונראה לי כי עבודה עצר רזל. So he's now saying that maybe that's not the interpretation. The simple interpretation is מלאכת עבודה is to distinguish between מלאכת עבודה and מלאכת הנויה, between business and pleasure. They both may be malacha, but if it's business malacha, it's prohibited on Yom Tov. If it's pleasure malacha, then it is permitted on Yom Tov. But he says that there is a braita which doesn't take this definition of the word avodah. So he says that maybe Chazal interpret avodah differently. V'nirah li ki avodah etzo Chazal torech ve'amal she'adam oved bo la'acher. That it's work that a person does for someone else. Lashon avodat eved avadim yihiel or avadim yihiel lechav avdu et kedar laomer v'chein avodat avoda v'avodat masa avodat kol torech shebaohel v'avodat masa b'kateif v'im keinu v'yashal shemalachot kalot shadam osel lahanat atzmo mutarod v'al pi she'ena ochel nefesh v'shihiel ochel nefesh merubah shehashem shashamash oved bo l'rabo asur. That's exactly the point you made before. Maybe, you know, building your toy model airplane on Yom Tov is something that you're doing for pleasure and for yourself, even though it is not Ochel Nefesh. You might, according to this interpretation, be permissible. But if you're a caterer and, you know, cooking a meal or wife cooking a meal for 100 guests or something like that, maybe that would not be permissible. That is, that the distinction should be made on the level of pleasure or hardship or displeasure that you take from your work, not on the issue of whether it is involved in foodstuffs or not. V'alkein sha'al minayin she'etir ha'heter hazehu ha'ochel nefesh ad she'natir kol ochel nefesh afilu b'torech v'ne'esor kol sha'ah ha'malachot she'afilu ha'kalot she'behem melechet avodah ikru. Then the Gemara, the Braita, is asking, is aware that this is not the correct distinction. The correct distinction is between work that is being done for the preparation of food. So even if you're cooking for 1,000 people, nevertheless it's permissible, and work that is not involved in the production of food, even if you're just doing it for your own pleasure, would not be permissible. Tamud loma mikokodish v'gzera shava, shesham ba'a kom locha l'isur v'chol ochel nefesh lahatir. V'ra'iti b'machilta datani ach asher yo'ochel ochel nefesh, kol ochel nefesh dochei yom tov, v'chein ein kol avodah dochei yom tov. ויהי מקצת אוכל נפש דוחה שבת, ועדין נותן המים במקום שאין כל עבודה דוחה יום טוב, כל אוכל נפש דוחה יום טוב, מקום שמצאת עבודה דוחה שבת, אין שיהיה מצאת אוכל נפש דוחה שבת, תעמוד לא מאח אשר יאכל אוכל נפש מקצת עבודה דוחה את השבת, ואין מקצת אוכל נפש דוחה את השבת. ופירוש מקצת עבודה כמו שבת היום, תמידים ומוספים, ואין כל עבודה דוחה יום טוב, נדרים ונדבות עולם נדבר. אבל מקצת אוכל נפש לא נתברר לי פירושו. What is this אלא שירמוז למה שאמרנו שהבא בתוך גדול שדומה לעבודה יהיה בכלל איסור, והבא בנקל כמנהגו שאדם עצמו יהיה במותר. או מקצתו כדי חייו ומקצתו כגון תוכאלו תבשילים ומרובים לתענוג והכלל במחת עבודה שולה תירו חלנת. So he says he still doesn't quite understand what the category, what the differentiation here is. And this is a puzzle. Because we now, okay, whatever it is, the distinction is between ochel nefesh and not ochel nefesh. Ochel nefesh is permissible, and not ochel nefesh is not permissible on the mitzvah. But this leaves us with two big problems. One problem, which we won't deal with tonight, but we'll discuss briefly next week in Yetz Hashem, is the issue of what is the definition of ochel, or ochel nefesh. In other words, you're allowed to fry your egg, you're allowed to cook your coffee, you're allowed to cook your soup. What about taking a bath? In other words, is ochel nefesh limited to foodstuffs, or is it to be interpreted in the broader sense of physical pleasure? You're allowed to engage in those activities. In other words, is ochel limited to mean only foodstuff, or is it to be interpreted more broadly? That's
more
one question.
More pleasure than food. Sports?
Yeah, like sports or other things. So that's a question of what the definition is of ochel nefesh. Tonight we will embark on a more serious problem. That is, suppose that you're talking about cooking. What is permitted for cooking? No. We understand that you're allowed to turn up the fire if you have a fire and put the pot on the fire. We also know that there may be some prohibition against starting a new fire, but that's construed as a nisa de rabbanan, whatever it is. Okay? But now, let's take something more serious. Suppose your electric oven is on the blink. Are you allowed to
repair it?
Take your soldering iron and repair the wires. Are you allowed to, suppose you've moved in to a new house, are you allowed to build the connections? Right? You moved into a house on Erev Yantuf, and the house isn't yet connected to the gas outlet. Are you allowed to get some pipe fitting and engage in connecting the pipes? In other words, the problem here is the definition of ochel nefesh limited to a specific class of melachot? And anything that's beyond this class of melachot, even if it's for the purpose of ochel nefesh, is prohibited. In other words, is the heter of ochel nefesh on Yom Tov, is that limited to a specific list of melachot which are in the preparation of food? You're allowed to bake, you're allowed to cook, you're allowed to knead. What about grinding? What about cutting the food? Plowing, seeding, all of those things. Okay, plowing is probably not, because it's hard to imagine a case in which you're going to plow and the fruit will all be ready for you to eat on the same Yom Tov. What about picking the apples off the tree? What about reaping the wheat? All of those things. Are they permitted? In other words, the first question that we're asking ourselves is whether the definition of the heter of ochel nefesh is defined according to a list of melachot, a list of types of activities, or is it defined according to purpose? And that even if you're performing some other malacha, which might not normally be construed as something normal in the production of food, but if you're doing it in order to produce food, it would be permissible. Are you allowed to hunt? Are you allowed to go catch a fish on Yom Tov in order to have a fresh fish to eat? Very specific question. We know that you're allowed to kill the fish. We know that you're allowed to slaughter the chicken. Are you allowed to go trap the pigeon? Trap a wild bird, a kosher bird? Or are you allowed to go fishing? Okay, this is one problem. A second problem is there any limitation between things that you were permitted to do on Yom Tov because you were unable to do them before? In other words, or if it's something that could have been done Erev Yom Tov, you're therefore not allowed to postpone doing it on Yom Tov. Those are two questions that we have to address. And unfortunately, these issues have given rise to a large variety of opinions amongst the Rishonim. There's no unanimity of opinion on this particular question. So let's see what the sources are. So there are two places that we have to read originally before we get to the Rishonim. We should see the Gemara, and there are really two places that we should have to see before we see the Rishonim. One is the Yerushalmi in Shabbat. So let's take a look in there. That's what it's around. Yerushalmi says, the fourth line from the top. Tani. Ein bororin, lo tochanim, velo markidim. You can't pick the stones out of the flour, you can't grind the flour, and you can't sift the flour. Haborer, hatochen, hamarkid, v'shabbat, niskal, v'yom tov, sofeg et arabayim. So according to this brayta, which is brought by the Yerushalmi, sifting or grinding or picking the stones out of flour on Yom Tov is asur midyaraita. V'hataninan barer kedarko b'cheiko v'tamchui, amore v'cheinina al tenunah d'Rabbanan Gamliel. D'Rabbanan Gamliel homer af madiach v'sholeh. V'hataninan shobet rabbi nuel yusuf hakim et apilpolim b'rei chayim shalahem. V'mutar l'tchon v'asur libo. Rabbi Yossi v'shem rabbi Ila lo hutra tchina kedarka. U'minayin she'ein barorin v'lo tochanim v'lo markidim. Rabbi Yossi, v'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, kol melacha lo ya'asu v'hem, ad u'shmartem et ha-matzot. The two psukim that we saw in the law in Bo, the pasuk immediately after the heter of Ochel Nefesh, says that u'shmartem et ha-matzot. Tani Rabbi Yossi bai klum lamdu al tavshel al michan, Rabbi Yossi omer lo ken, el Rabbi Yossi v'shem Rishon ben Lakish, ach ha'she yechel lechem, hu levado yase lechem, ad u'shmartem et ha-matzot. Tani Cheski, our colleague, Achu, Rak Eleim, Itim Shalolik Tzor, Lolit Kom, Lola Hakir Biyomto. Okay, so the Yerushalmi says that Ushmartem et Amatzot, that those Melachot, Nishmira Ve'elech, if we agree that Nisha is the time, and there's a machloket as to this also, but if we agree that there's no requirement of the Shmira of Kemach until the water touches it, and there's an equation between the heter of Melachot Yom Tov and the halacha of Shmirat HaMatzot, then only those Melachot which come after Lisha are permitted on Yom Tov. So you're allowed to knead the dough, but you're not allowed to grind the dough, and you're not allowed to sift the dough, the flour. You're not allowed to grind the flour, and you're not allowed to sift the flour on Yom Tov. So the Yerushalmi has a very clear-cut position, namely that the heter of Ochel Nefesh is limited to a specific list of melachot. For some reason or other, if we're looking at meat rather than bread, then we include shchita in the things that are permissible. You're allowed to slaughter the chicken or the behemoth on Yom Tov, and then from there on you're allowed to perform all the necessary activities. But whatever it is, the position of the Yerushalmi is that the heter of Ochel Nefesh is limited to a class of the Lamatet Malachot. The other Malachot are not permissible on Yom Tov. Now, second thing that we should see that relates to the second of these items is the Gemara on Beitza. You have your own Gemara Beitza. It's a little further on. Where is it? Lamatet on the Beitz, I guess. Can I see? Give me the Gemara and I'll check the exact
Da. Is there any significance where Biyosi says, Slovu Tratachina Kedarka?
Yeah, we'll come back to that. Okay. Okay, so it's that Chaf Ketan Beis. All right, about the Amar of Yosef, Sakin She'amda Mutal Achadida B'Yom Tov.
a knife that has become dull, you're allowed to sharpen on Yom Tov. Bahani mili hu de paskal gav dukka. Dorash of Chista b'tem av Yosef, echad sakin shen et gama, v'echad shbut shen yotzam, v'echad echad grifat tano v'kirayim v'yom tov, banu l'machloket rav Yehuda v'rabana. The issue as to whether you can sharpen a knife that has gotten a nick on it, or fix a spit where the head of it became... You're allowed to examine it, yes. But the question is whether you're allowed to repair it. And the Gemara says that if the issue of whether you're allowed to sharpen a knife or fix a spit where the point became bent or dull, or to scrape out an oven, or a smaller oven than a Yom Tov, banu l'machloket Rav Yehuda v'Rabbanan, the Tanya, ein bein Yom Tov l'Shabbat ela ochel nefesh korban. There's no difference between the laws of Shabbat and Yom Tov except ochel nefesh. Rav Yehuda matir af machshirei ochel nefesh. Even those things which are necessary for the preparation of food, but not necessarily directly for the cooking of food. My Tanya de Tanakama, amar kra hu levado ye'aseh lachem hu velo machshirei. Rav Yehuda omer, amar kra, lachem, lachem l'chol tzarkechem. V'tanakam ha'aktiv lachem, amar lacha, ha'hu lachem v'lo l'nachrim. V'idach nam yaktiv hu, amar lacha tiv hu v'ktiv lachem, v'lo kashya kan b'machshirim she'efshar la'asotam me'erav yom tal, kan b'machshirim she'i efshar la'asotam me'erav yom tal. Rav Yehuda Moshmuel, Rav Yehuda Moshmuel, Shpul Shnei Yotzaf, Asul Atakno B'Yom Tov, Pshita, Lo Tzricha, Dachal Gav, D'Mapshit Yadet, even if you can straighten it out by hand. Okay, in any event, the Gemara mentions a machloket as between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim as to whether Machshirei Ochel Nefesh are permitted on Yom Tov, and the Gemara adds that what you are... The Gemara adds that